Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about cannabis. What is it? What is all of the pressure about? What are all the myths? What are truths? Why is everybody saying, I really don't know about it? Oh, I want to get some of that. And it's going to cure this, that, and the other thing. There's so much controversy out there right now about cannabis. We want to talk to an expert tonight. And my expert is Dr. Stephen Holt. He's a pioneer of integrative medicine and a best-selling author. And the book we'll be talking about this evening is The Cannabis Revolution, What You Need to Know. A very large book with tons of information. Dr. Holt goes into every single question, and he shares research, a lot of clinical information, and a lot of documented truths so you can make decisions. Dr. Holt, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
So, Dr. Holt, don't you think all we have to say is that word? And it can almost clear a room or split a room, yes?
Yeah, I think your statements are accurate. It's controversial, and there are many differences of opinion about its use, and some are very polar differences of opinion, with protagonists on the one hand, and people who are complaining about its availability on the other. So it is a very contentious subject.
You know, I think that what's happening is the word has a lot of antiquated history with it, and we kind of drag along the old history and dogma into a present-day conversation, and we really have a lot of disconnect. Do you think?
Oh, definitely. Up until about 10 years or so ago, most literature on cannabis was negative, talking about the side effects. Even papers were published on the evil nature of cannabis and its dangers. So we found out with recent studies that cannabis has promised as a cornucopia of different compounds, some of which may be very valuable in medical treatments. But we have at present much in the way of political, economic, social, and medical discussions, which again bring up a lot of controversy and different points of view.
You know, absolutely. I think that once we say the word cannabis, everybody says, oh, that weed. We used to do it in the 70s, you know. We used to, it made us crazy. It did this, that, or the other. And it gave a lot of stigma, a lot of laws were broken. People are still in jail for it. And I think that for people now to be able to say, now you're telling me it's going to help me, how is that going to affect my life? So can we start right out, Dr. Holt, with really what is cannabis? Because when we think about it, it's a plant. You know, in the early 50s, 60s, and 70s, some people used to grow them on their windowsills and water them. Their parents never knew what it was, you know, but now we see people digging it up and burning it because they say it's illegal. So it's a plant to start with, but can you share how that plant got so misconstrued along history and what really is cannabis?
Well, cannabis belongs to a group of plants called Cannabisea plants. Difficult pronunciation. But basically, there are different types of the plant that have different qualities. The one that is most talked about is Cannabis sativa, which is the plant that contains the psychoactive substance that tends to give people a high. There's also another type of the plant, another species called Cannabis ruderalis, and then there's another one, yet another one, which is Cannabis indica is the third one. We have basically in the raw, it's a concoction usually of flowers, stems and leaves that form a grayish green substance that is smoked commonly, that's a common administration of it, or extracted in some form. You can get an oil from it, and you can get other specific extracts, most notably cannabidiol, which is a component of cannabis, one of the so-called phytocannabinoids, and this particular substance, cannabidiol, has no psychoactive effects and is sold currently as a dietary supplement, but arguably it's not legal. But it's still sold by some people as a dietary supplement.
You know, it's so different these days. Excuse me. It's so different these days because when you used to think of smoking weed, people would get high, or they would have bongs, which would the smoke would go through a water. And now we are saying that we now have medical marijuana, and what does that really, constituents are in there? Are we going to get high from medical marijuana, or is it just this watered-down byproduct of the cannabis plants, like so many are saying, or is it truly something that will definitely have many medicinal factors?
Well, there are many promising outcomes of taking cannabis in different forms. There are forms of cannabis that have been legalized that are combinations of various plants. In addition, we have a number of pharmaceutical-type phytocannabinoids which come as extracts or as synthetic products made as cannabinoids for prescription use.
So do we think that if someone, let's say, has a medical condition, are we really wanting those people to, quote, get high, or are we looking at the best effect to be able to have what we always call lock and key, you know, in other words, to go into those receptors and cause a medical helpful result, correct?
Well, true. And it depends on the condition that is being treated. For example, cannabidiol, which is found predominantly in Charlotte's Web, has had particular use in the treatment of epilepsy, especially in children. So that's an example of how one of these substances is used independent of any psychoactive effects. So not all cannabis or cannabis derivatives give the high that obviously is the commonest reason why cannabis is used on a recreational basis, is to obtain a high.
Right. You know, it's almost like I like to talk about cannabis. It's and relate it to something that our listeners can understand. And when I say it like this, is I just saw a friend had posted about they were picking grapefruit today, and they live in Arizona. And
right.
In Arizona, the grapefruits are absolutely huge because in the desert, the fruit takes on the water as much as possible so that it could survive. But yet if you had a grapefruit from Florida, it would be solid and dense, and it would have a lot less water content, and it would just be sweeter. So very similarly, we look at cannabis. It has several different types and ranges about where it's grown, what's actually able to be extracted out of that, and how there's so many different components in the plant. And really, when we're talking about medicinal marijuana, we're looking at different types of plants for their different types of, the way they were grown or whatever, for those specific parts, because we're really not saying cannabis is this plant, stick it in the ground, and it's the same all around. It isn't. Everything is different. All of the parts of the plant has different chemical pieces to it, and those are the different pieces we're talking about that might work for several different things, correct?
Yes. Well, you're very on the ball when it comes to this. The number of different types or subspecies or hybrids of cannabis
right.
is very large, and each of them have different outcome effects on different people. It's not a homogeneous situation where you can look at cannabis and think, oh, that's one product, or
right.
the other name is marijuana, and whole pile of nicknames used to describe cannabis. So that's why when you go to a dispensary, a legal dispensary, they will sell you cannabis with different names.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate circumstance is the descriptive names don't apply across the board.
Mm-hmm.
There are types of cannabis sativa that contain varying concentrations of tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the psychoactive component. And there are strains that at maximum levels have up to 30% THC, that's tetrahydrocannabinol. And there are other strains that have less than 0.3%, which is a magic number. The authorities and regulators don't recognize anything under 0.3% as a problem, whereas if you exceed that number, it's a problem. Unless it's used under supervised and prescribed circumstance.
Right.
But here's something that comes into it that just adds to the confusion. We have legalized cannabis now, legalized for recreational use in several states. And we're only starting to see the results of cannabis introduction to any significant degree in the states that were early to recommend or approve cannabis use, such as Colorado. So we're still in a learning phase when it comes to, you know, the basic effects of
mm-hmm.
problems in society or no problems in society, cost, taxation issues, all sorts of things crop up. And the problem is that the legislation that's being done at the state level to this point in time, President Barack Obama left cannabis regulation to the states, the individual states. And so they have different rules and regulations concerning cannabis use. So that even muddies the waters more. And more recently, within the past 3 to 6 months, President Trump has been talking about trying to bring cannabis back under federal government control and not have the states control cannabis availability and use. So it is a bit of a jigsaw puzzle, to say the least.
You know, Dr. Holt, when a drug comes out, it's undergone several clinical trials. It has been experimental. It has gone through all the phases of, all of the research and everything. And a drug is for a health condition. Now we're talking about a plant for a health condition, which doctors would be recommending as a medical marijuana. But yet, it's going to be helping a health condition. However, it really hasn't been clinically trial studied as much, or really, is it maybe that it has more effects on the society versus the clinical aspect? You know, because really, if you give a pharmaceutical drug for a health condition, it doesn't affect society as much. But then it turned around, let's look at opioids. I guess they did. They kind of took away and tore down society pretty much. And now we're looking at another medical marijuana and we're saying we're letting this go now. So are we now taking it and saying, oh, let's just do this because we really don't know what else, so they want to get ahead of the curve. And what's really going to happen? Because, in other words, it's something that can help people. There isn't some government that's going to say it's good, bad, or indifferent, and then yet it affects everybody. Because if you're driving down the street and you have someone that's used the drug inappropriately or not, it may affect other people, right?
Yes. That's been an area of considerable argument. There have been studies showing that cannabis has had no effect on impaired driving, and studies that show it does have an effect mm-hmm. and causes impaired driving. But cannabis has been used in many, many different conditions. But you're right, the information tends to be anecdotal, like a series
right.
at best of experiences, and not controlled clinical trials. We don't have a controlled trial, for example, in cancer treatment, where it's been used to some benefit. There are some small trials, one that was performed in Spain by Dr. Guzman and his associates on a very highly malignant type of brain cancer called glioblastoma multiforme. Forget the name, but this is a tumor that causes death in most people who have it very quickly. And there were, in 9 patients, some favorable observations in 8 without much extension of lifetime, incidentally, but some mm-hmm. beneficial effects were noted on various symptoms. So we're now just beginning to piece together trials where we can look at individual types of cannabis in various formats and compare them against existing treatments and find out what the outcome is. But it's early days. No, it's early days.
Because I think the quest, anytime someone says, hey, this helped me, everybody wants to swarm around them and swear they're the guru, and they got to get some of whatever they've got. And, you know, because so many people are in physical pain and they are having a lot of serious health conditions these days, that if you can cure anything or stop the pain of something, people will sell their life savings for it, don't you think?
Well, I do. And it's unfortunate because I'll give you an example. There are agencies and individuals who swear that cancer can be cured. Certain
right.
types of cancer can be cured by marijuana or cannabis. But that's just not the case. At best, there are favorable outcomes, especially in palliation. That's keeping
right.
the patient comfortable. But mm-hmm. cure? No. No examples of, documented examples of any consistent cannabis cure have come forward.
You know, I think the idea when we use the word cure and heal, people think that they're going to be reverted back to their prior disease status. So they'll look for anything that will promise them that existence because they fear what that other path might be, no matter what it is, and they don't want any part of that. So if they can find something that will turn them around and pop them into that pre-disease time, they want it. You know, but even if we look at you and I both being in healthcare forever, you know, we can look at it and we can say that even sometimes people go into hospice and, you know, at some terminal illness or something, and they've got a certain amount of time, and there have been miracles there too, you know. So sometimes people come out of hospice, you know what I mean? So I think that when we are saying that there are things that are attributed to, quote, my, I have this disease or whatever, and I'm now doing cannabis, and oh, look at what it did for me. It may have been, as you said, anecdotal because you don't really know. Because if we can keep our scope and our eyes open and say there are millions of different ways, reasons, and things around the world, all the way from miracles to medical cures, there's that full range in the middle where it can attribute anything to anything, right?
Well, I think that's true. You know, there are potentially exploitive complaints. Claims about cannabis doing this and cannabis doing that.
Right.
But when you get down to analyzing the literature, the strength isn't there to make those kinds of strong statements. So that in itself is a problem that we face on how we discuss cannabis. I mean, cannabis has had its fair share of use in practically all body system diseases. So, you know, we're gathering information and we are seeing more clinical trials. There are pharmaceutical companies that have now stepped in and are quite active in running clinical trials. And there are drugs before the FDA looking at, the Food and Drug Administration, that is, looking at possibility of being approved for use. But the federal government does make it clear that controlled use is really the way things should be. And that also comes along with states where cannabis has been approved for recreational use. Again, as I said earlier, the principal reason for recreational use is to get the psychoactive high effect.
Right.
And taxation makes legal cannabis, more expensive. So there's still a massive market in illicit cannabis availability. And then there are some forms of cannabis that are not cannabis, but they're confused with cannabis. They're sometimes called synthetic pot.
Right.
And these synthetic forms of cannabis are illegal and in some circumstances very dangerous. And they're used by youngsters. So we have to be very careful, very vigilant in our follow-up and our understanding as we develop more wisdom in the structure of the cannabis industry.
I think the number one goal is to put something out there as a standardized form. This is what cannabis is. This is THC. This is how it can or cannot help and in what percentages. Then go for with the CBD, same parameters. And then also to talk about the synthetic, and let's also again touch on hemp, because there are hemp oils, which is a nutrition hemp oil. It's just of the seed, and it's used for cooking, and it's used in cosmetics. And then there's also the hemp seed, which a lot of vegetarians eat, because it provides some nutrition for some things they may have taken out of their diet. I mean, that is a full range, from everything to helping with significant health concerns all the way down to nutrition out of what we're calling cannabis, right? Or it's just such a large parameter of documentation studies that have to be evaluated and give some almost like guidelines. It's almost like we want to see a chart on one page that says, boom, this is it, right?
Yes, I think that's true. But some people have said that there are up to 400 different constituents of the cannabis plant.
Right.
Not all have, you know, effects on the body to any significant degree. Some of them are just what we call metabolites that are not active.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so simple just to produce simple descriptions and say, well, this contains this, and therefore it's for that. And, you know, people are tailoring cannabis to patient requirements, those that need CBD, cannabidiol, those that really need THC for whatever reason. That's where we are with research and development at the moment. And, you know, there are very many physicians that are active now in cannabis research, but as I mentioned, up to 10, 20 years ago, all the literature was negative. Everything was negative
right.
about cannabis. Now that wheel has turned, and we see the promise of benefit from cannabis in certain circumstances.
You know, I think also, too, Dr. Holt, when they say in some states that the patient can grow their own, there's also areas where people are growing it and providing it to the medical medicinary. And then all of that is just within that state. And just as I said before about the grapefruit, there can be different plants in different states that could have different potencies. So really, it's almost like it is so random right now. I'm not sure, you know, how we might get a hold on that. Do you?
No, people have talked about stiffer regulations, controls, but you can't control the illicit cannabis market very easily. It's not easy to control given the availability of home growing that you've just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's an issue with home growing. there isn't any standard information about growing cannabis at home, even though, believe it or not, the best-selling book that's been written on cannabis in recent times was How to Grow Cannabis at Home. So there's a lot of people certainly doing what you're suggesting they're doing. Whether mm-hmm. it's being done right,
right
is another story, because they're using different conditions of growing,
yes,
different fertilizers, and you know, it's a mixture of tricks, really.
Right, because if there any condition that a plant is grown under will give or yield a certain amount or concentration of that chemically reactive active compound in it. So that's what's really all about. People will say, I'm going to eat this tomato and my tomato is the same tomato as yours. Well, that could be, that is so far from the truth, it's pathetic. Because, you know, I might have a tomato that I grew outside and I just picked it just now and it's fully just at its peak of perfection. You might have gotten a tomato that's kind of been, it was green and you kind of just left it on your counter till it, quote, got ripe, when really what it was doing was degrading and it had hardly any vitamin C whatever that you might have been looking for. So I think the idea of, can we regulate cannabis, can we say this is how much is in it and this is what's going to do for you, is probably one really big thing, as we say, pie in the sky, because unless it's under federal regulation and distributed by the federal government and further regulated and tested, really we're all out there. Yes?
Well, that's true, but the federal government has relatively little to do with the actual distribution at the moment. That may change. But I gave you an inkling of examples. There are schizophrenic reactions or schizoid reactions developed by cannabis in some people, yet in other people, schizophrenia has been attempted to be treated by cannabis with some evidence or alleged evidence of benefit. So for every positive outcome, there seems to be a negative outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets very difficult. And in my book, The Cannabis Revolution, I do something that I haven't really done before. And that is, because of the confusion, I've used verbatim statements. I've taken verbatim information from credible sources and repeated it, because that's what's happened that's wrong with the cannabis literature. It's, in many cases, not to be relied upon. You know, it's opinion and supposition rather than fact. So getting the real facts out there is means it's necessary to go to the original studies. And there is a huge body now of literature on cannabis, and cannabis use has expanded and continues to expand as more states permit recreational cannabis. Now, recreational cannabis comes with problems itself, because more widespread availability of cannabis means that young people, youngsters, I'm talking about below the age of 18, develop access to cannabis, and they are very vulnerable to the adverse outcome of cannabis, adverse effects. There are effects described on behavior, there are effects described on intelligence quotient. There are many different negative effects which occur in children and can be carried through to adult life. So I don't recommend anybody promote the use of cannabis in children. I think that's definitely wrong. And while I'm a protagonist to a significant degree of cannabis availability, it has to be controlled, it has to be monitored, and it has to be done with vigilance.
And I also think, too, it needs to be done with reporting. And the reason is people will say, oh, well, I don't want to be on the books, so to speak. However, that information, when someone does have cannabis for a medical condition, that to please do report, because your information will be then put into a bank so that that bank that maybe or potentially could be used later for clinical trials. Someone could say, you know, I used it, this is what I had for symptoms, and this is what my results were. And that information around a certain amount of patients can eventually say, this is what they've reported. Now let's take it to clinical trials to see if we can reproduce it. Evidence-based medicine, can we reproduce it? Can we see that these are similar in more people? And that we are able to say, okay, then maybe it's not a theory. Let's start to test our theories, right?
I understand. And since you don't have many studies with, you know, standardized cannabis itself,
mm-hmm.
It really puts you in the dark concerning what, you know, what the best treatment actually is. But there are circumstances, as I've mentioned, where cannabis shouldn't be used. I mentioned childhood, pregnancy, and there may be a risk to people with more severe forms of cardiac disease. So, again, it's not completely safe. And I didn't want to turn our discussion into a negative, but what we're looking for is what people have termed responsible use of cannabis. Cannabis seems to be quite safe in otherwise healthy people when it's taken in the correct format, you know, not synthetic pot.
Mm-hmm.
But taxation is a big issue because taxation is starting to drive the illicit market. Cannabis sold as a pharmaceutical or even sold in dispensaries that are legalized in certain states is very expensive, and that pushes people to use, you know, the illicit substance, which is cheaper and widely available.
You know, I can remember when Arizona started this, because I'm licensed in Arizona, and it was that you were not to write a prescription for the drug and you go to a local drugstore and pick it up. You would get a card and you would have a recommendation, and then you would see a different physician that would be able to help you get that product at the pharmacy. And now I'm in Louisiana and they are thinking about opening one here. However, there's only, I think they said, 3 or 4 physicians in the whole state who even signed up to be interested in the program, because they're just not even ready to make that leap yet. So there are some states which you can get quite a bit of help, and I know a lot of people are going to those states and they're finding great benefits for a lot of their symptoms. So do you think that eventually most states will have it, or do you think it will stay just to some states that are already progressive in their setup? In other words, with the doctors, with the availability, and able to provide it to the patients, and the patients are really seeing the best results, like maybe California, Washington State, Nevada, Arizona, states like that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are that the cannabis revolution is creeping along, and I see that it's inevitable that it will become more widely available for recreational use.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one thing that we talk about But remember, many states have medical legislation for its use, but fewer states have recreational use guidelines. I think you asked me a few questions, you know, together there. And there has been, or there have been attempts to put together various monitoring committees to look at the effect of cannabis on local populations. And we're seeing some of that data come through. A lot of it is encouraging. It's, you know, I mentioned this idea that we'd have a problem with motor vehicle accidents, but it hasn't been the case in all places. But personally, I believe that you should not smoke marijuana and drive a car because it impairs you. It impairs your reaction time, and I think it has to be assumed to be dangerous, just like alcohol and driving.
Dr. Holt, do you think that people who are now stuck in the wheelbarrow of opioids and their addictions, is this an alternative? Is this something that will potentially get them off of opioids or maybe control the symptoms from a disease that got them on there in the first place?
Well, that is a fascinating question. And let me tell you, I think that marijuana is safer than opioids. I can't make, you know, specific direct comparison, but overall, I think the outcome of use is safer. Whether or not one could wean somebody off an opioid onto marijuana is an interesting suggestion. But you have to remember that marijuana has been described, arguably, as a gateway drug. So switching from marijuana or cannabis to heroin is a problem. As indeed is switching from opioids to heroin. So it is a bit of a conundrum, to say the least, because we're looking at the opioid epidemic and its ravishing, terrible effects on some people, and we're staring cannabis in the face and wondering if we're going to create any problems that are somewhat similar to some of the problems created by opioids.
However, opioids were distinctly for pain, period. Is marijuana distinctly used or recommended or perhaps suggested use just for pain?
Well, it's not just for pain, but pain is one of the common reasons, uncontrollable pain, that marijuana is used from a medical perspective. And it has provided relief and benefit to a number of people with a number of conditions. But as we look forward at some of the clinical trials, the results, for example, let me take the example of epilepsy, studied in young people, we found that, you know, it's not completely effective in everybody. It's only a certain but dominant percentage that do benefit. But the idea of switching one potential drug of dependence to another is a very controversial area. And I'm unaware that there are any studies on weaning patients from opioids to marijuana, but there may be studies out there that I'm unaware of, but it's an interesting issue you've raised.
You know, I think that we are at such a break in society right now and in the medical field with the question of pain. Pain is not something you can find on a CT scan or an MRI. It's not something you can cut open and take out. And it's not something that you can put your hand on and say, ooh, I can push this over and now I'm going to fix it for you. So people with the concept of pain, then we get into, is it a mental health issue or is it a physical one? And then really that just takes us down a black hole, you know, that we just simply can't get out of sometimes once people have irretractable pain, don't you think?
Well, yes. I do think that that's a problem. But there are many pain sufferers who have terminal disease or serious chronic disease that would perhaps benefit from the responsible use of cannabis. So it's another of many dilemmas that are faced when you look at the indications for cannabis, which incidentally vary from state to state. The reason for medical cannabis use in New York is not the same as the reasons for cannabis medical use in Colorado, for example. There's a difference. So there's no homogeneity in the politics of cannabis legalization. And no homogeneity, as we discussed earlier, in the type of cannabis products that are available, bearing in mind that most cannabis used is probably illicit, especially in youngsters. So it's a argument that we could go round and round with.
Right. But I think also, too, your book, again, The Cannabis Revolution, Dr. Holt, you have a lot of diseases in there, and you listed it all out. And there are many areas in which cannabis may be very beneficial. However, I think if we wrote down opioids and we said, yeah, let's use that just as a comparison, I don't think we could use the same type. We wouldn't have these same conversations. We would just say opioid pain, here's your list of your side effects, you know. So, or similar things like other medications and drugs, maybe, I don't know, let's just take it, statins, for example. Here's a statin, this is what it does, you know, and this is the side effects. And pretty much there aren't really, you know, we look at cannabis. Cannabis is a plant. It has nutrition. If you go all the way down to the bottom part of it with the CBDs, the oils, and the hemp, we're looking at nutrition aspects of it. I don't think we have a nutrition aspect of an opioid or a statin, do we? You know? So in other words, we have so many various parts of the cannabis plant that there are so many advantages that we don't even know of yet. And I think there's so many that are there. It's just something we can't deny these days of all of the potentials. And really, it's like, it's almost like, oh, you just want to just like touch it, feel it, and see what it does kind of idea. And that's really where we are at right now, I think, within the medical society, yes?
Definitely. Definitely. In fact, I touch in a chapter in my book, The Cannabis Revolution, on the use of cannabis as nutrition, you know, and its various presentations. You've mentioned some, like cannabis seed. There are a number of attempts to place cannabis into the so-called nutraceutical category. Mm-hmm. But, again, this idea of selling CBD outside areas where it's approved for use, usually areas where there's recreational use, is not legal, still not legal. And despite that, we're not seeing very much in the way of prosecution of people who've been selling CBD as a dietary supplement.
And also, too, that we don't even know, just like you could take you could take a product and you could say, oh, it has, let's say, vitamin C. Oh, this product has vitamin C in it, you know, and people will think, oh, well, I'm getting all my vitamin C in it. It's good. You know, CBD oil is the same on the market right now, where when someone, all they need to do is stick a name on there and sell it for whatever price they want to, and it's almost being adulterated because the consumer does not know how much is in there, what components are in there, active or non-active, and all they need to say is, hey, this is a plant. It could be a dead plant on the road, and they could say, oh, but it's that plant. We can stick it in a jar, stick a little oil in there, whatever else we want to throw in, and there's no regulation, right?
Right. And you've raised another issue that perhaps some people are unaware of. Cannabis has sold in the 70s, you know, mm-hmm. when there was really a popular surge in cannabis use, is not the same strength or composition of cannabis sold today.
Right.
For example, there's a commercial variety of cannabis called skunk.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that comes from the smell of that type of cannabis, because cannabis doesn't smell very good, as many people know. And now we've got hybridization with skunk, where we've got 20% of the psychoactive component, THC, whereas earlier in the 70s, 2%, 4% was the amount of THC in cannabis that was widely used, at least illicit cannabis. So we've now got strains that are much more powerful than they were 30, 40 years ago. It's changed dramatically, as we've discussed.
So, Dr. Holt, do you think that if someone has a health condition and they are in a state where there is an option for medical marijuana, it is something that I think it's something that say, hey, you know, it's worth exploring. But yet there's many people, too, that say, I really need some help with my health. Do I move? Do I go to one of those states? What are your thoughts?
Well, people have moved to states where there's more availability or access to marijuana, for example, in Colorado. But now that we have more states that have legalized the medical use of marijuana, moving is probably not necessary, but in states where it's unavailable, yes, people have moved if they've become reliant on the benefits of cannabis for whatever medical or other reason they wish to take it.
Right. So in closing, Dr. Holt, I think that there are many beneficial areas that CBD, THC are definitely something that should be explored if it's an option provided by your physician. And also to have the discussion or ask the questions. Don't you think? I think that we will see, I know since you've probably written your book, which was just last year, there's probably been more and more information coming out every day. So I think to keep up, and don't you think to keep up and keep asking the questions is probably the best thing for patients to do?
Definitely. I've had to state in my book at the time of writing, because things are changing so rapidly. The whole situation is so dynamic And we're seeing approvals in different states all the time.
Right. Absolutely. I think that to be able to say there are options out there coming up, and for people to say, I don't want to go the opioid track, and maybe there might be some other way to help with my health condition, is really a great option, yes?
I think it is. Yes, I think it certainly is. I think there's more safety in cannabis use with correct selection than there is with opioid use. I mean, opioid kills people. Marijuana does have its adverse effects, but it's not got the same death risk as you get with opioid abuse.
Right.
So, you know, we're comparing two very serious situations. When I say serious, we're talking about cannabis users, and we're talking about opioid users, and cannabis users don't tend to get into the same risk of overdose as do the opioid users.
Right. You know, in closing, Dr. Holt, I think many people say, I don't want to be one of those weed people. But, of course, many times people will say, I need to hide in my home because I really need some help. And this is what my doctor suggested. And many people are not speaking out for fear. I think there's a lot of fear around using this product, asking for this product, or being found out that they're taking this product by people who don't really understand how it may be helping them or how it may be allowing them to live a life that's a little bit easier than the day before. So I think our discussion is really about alleviating some fear and saying, let's start the conversation amongst everyone, because that's what's more important right now, don't you think?
Yes, yes, especially for people that unfortunately have chronic, relatively untreatable disease. You know, it certainly is very valuable to consider cannabis as an option. But I like the idea that people would use it under medical supervision.
Right.
But there's this massive illicit market that is being pushed by patient demand. So I'm not for 1 minute promoting illicit cannabis.
Right.
But it's happening, and you know, it is a problem. It is a problem on how it's regulated, who will regulate it, and ultimately, what will it do to society? We'll only see that as it evolves.
Well, Dr. Holt, I think this has been a great hour of talking about cannabis, because many times people will say, I didn't know the question to ask, or I didn't understand the language on how to talk to my physician about it. And I think over this conversation, we've shared many of the ups and downs, some of the words, CBD, THC, hemp, you know, or the synthetic. We've shared a lot of things that you might be concerned about. Do I drive? Do I hide in my home? Or should I ask my physician and say, you know what? I have alternatives. So I think we've given them a lot of information to be able to say, it's going to be okay. Just ask your doctor. That's what he's there for, right?
Right. That's it.
Absolutely.
You should ask healthcare professionals, and hopefully they have educated themselves. But my book, The Cannabis Revolution, is all about self-education.
Yes.
It even contains a little quiz questionnaire at the end when you read the book to make sure that you picked up the main points. But there's so much information here, it's difficult to summarize in a radio show like this.
Right. I think, Dr. Holt, if your physician is new to the topic, or if you would like to explore it, or you'd like to have a discussion with your family members, if you're having trouble, do pick up Dr. Holt's book, again, it's The Cannabis Revolution, and be able to read it yourself. I mean, the book is available everywhere, and, you know, you get the book, you look at it, you read it, underline things in it, fold down the pages, take it with you, carry it around, and try to ask other people, you know, what it really talks about and how can we find out more information. So can you share, Dr. Holt, more information about you and the book? That would be wonderful.
Yes. My name is Stephen Holt, spelled S-T-E-P-H-E-N-H-O-L-T. And the book is probably most easily available by calling 973-256-4660. That's 973-256-4660. And the website to find the book is holtbooks.com, holtbooks.com, or stephenholtbooks.com. There are two websites that carry information.
Well, Dr. Holt, it was such a pleasure to have you with us here today. I think many are feeling a little bit shaky, and they put up with their pain, and they're really missing out on life. So it's really about trying to find a way to have a day where you are able to enjoy your life as best you can and as for as long as you can, right?
Definitely, definitely. And
well,
the
Dr.
book should empower people to be
yes.
able to do that.
I think there's so much information in your book. It's a large book. It's a paperback, but it is available. And for everyone to say, you know, there's tons of documentation. There's a lot of footnotes in there. There's a lot of bibliography. So if you want to look up something further, you're able to find it in the book. There's a lot of information. So please do pick up the book. Dr. Holt, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you with us.
And you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Holt. If you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Stephen Holt, and again, the book is The Cannabis Revolution, the link is on the bottom of today's show page to find out more information about Dr. Holt. Also, to be able to purchase the book, all of the links are there, and also the phone number where you can call and order the book. And please do share it with your family members and friends, because many may be able to say, I don't know much about it. I didn't buy the book because I don't understand the language. But you may understand it, or you may have some friends that are also interested in it. You could almost have a book club reading about it. So please do reach out, find out more information, and ask the questions. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.